Greetings, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Here we are. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are just gathering on the first Thursday of May, which is actually the first Wednesday this week of 2022. So this is Wednesday, May 4th. We have moved our event one day earlier to Wednesday. So thank you all for being flexible. I know some people were not able to make it because of that, and I apologize for that, but I'm glad you're here and we're eager to go ahead and get started. So, just to let you know, there was some confusion actually about the date of this Taiwan event. So I'm going to just maybe explain it here and maybe much more briefly at the end. So that's why we moved it back, because they told me originally that it would be on Friday, which would be Thursday here in the United States. And so I thought, all right, well, you know, and they really, it's a big deal. I was on the phone with them yesterday. They have a Zoom channel that it's going to be going out on, which has 1,000 people maximum, and it's completely booked up. So they've opened it up on YouTube live, and they've already got over 650 people there. So we're already up to 1,650 people. They're going to be hearing me give a talk mainly from Taiwan. But I just got the email and an email from them, the link, if you'd like to join in. It'll be a presentation with a Q&A starting at 6 p.m. But the thing is, this is what's so funny, is that then I found out later, like after I'd already sent out the email asking everyone to come on Wednesday, they said, well, actually, no, it's on Saturday for us. It's on Friday for you. So there was some, you know, language and this and that and the other differences and translating. Something got lost. But anyway, so actually, the event will be at 6 p.m. on Friday, after all, not on Thursday. But I thought, I'm not going to change it again and again. So here we are. But I'll send out a link if you're free on Friday at 6. They're doing quite a production with this event, and it should be fun. It's an amazing group. It's called the Bliss and Wisdom. It's a spiritual community of thousands of people. And they're really trying to go vegan, and they've got a vegan school with over 1,200 students from K to 12, all vegan, organic. They teach the kids how to grow their own food. They've created vegan organic farms, and they have over 130 stores all over Taiwan selling organic vegan food. I mean, if we could get something like that in any other country in the world, especially here in the United States, it would transform our entire society. It's amazing what they're doing. Now they're going after the government to get the whole country to go vegan. I mean, they're doing it in the right way, though. They're doing it in a very spiritual, loving way of raising consciousness, starting at the foundation with children and with people. People in prison, they get them to work in these farms and get off drugs and grow organic food and go vegan. And you know, they have all these amazing outreach programs and all these stores where people learn about the benefits of organic food and vegan food. So they have these cafeterias where you can get an all-you-can-eat meal, vegan, organic, for $3. And you wash your own dish. You know, it's kind of like a cafeteria. They have them in the cities. I mean, it's really a brilliant thing. So anyway, they're the ones putting this on, and I'm really honored that they've chosen me to do this, because they wanted someone to give the spiritual and ethical foundations of veganism to try to really spread the vegan message throughout Taiwan more. So it'll be recorded and it'll get out to a lot more people. But anyway, that will be on Friday. So I just wanted to let you know at 6 p.m. So again, thanks everyone for the efforts that you're making. No effort is ever lost. The more we connect with our inner wisdom and share the light of compassion in the world, the better it is for everyone, and including ourselves and our loved ones. So let's go ahead and get started. We've got our usual person who, maybe I'll ask Suzanne. Usually Lisa, once I start the meditation, I can't it's really hard for me to let people in. If I make you, let's see, I'm going to, if that's okay, I'm going to make you a co-host, if that would be okay. And then you can just let people in if you see them waiting and I'm have my eyes closed or something. thank you. Okay. So, again, thanks for joining us, and we'll go ahead and get started with the meditation, which is sort of the main part of our time together, but I'm happy to let people know that after the talk, after the meditation, we can have a Q&A. So, I'll post the link for the Friday evening. I mean, I wonder, maybe I could just quickly grab it here. I just got this actually from them. The meeting, this is what they said. I'll just put it in. I'll just copy and paste it in. So this is it. This is the information they just sent me like a few minutes ago, actually, right before the call. So I'm just going to go ahead and post it in the chat. If you want to check out the chat, I guess. Okay. There we go. Not on the Zoom. So I just posted it up on the chat. If you want to see the link to the YouTube live, it's up there now. All right. So business is out of the way and we can begin. Now join together in our time of meditation. With every exhalation, we allow ourselves to relax into the place where we are, the sacred space, wherever we are. Is a sacred space made sacred by our aspiration to awaken to the truth that we are, to be a vehicle for healing, to be a vehicle for loving kindness, compassion, joy, and peace. Sacred space because we dwell always in unity with the infinite source of life. So we relax now into this moment, letting go of any concerns or cares you may have at this very moment for just this practice of connecting. We connect with the earth. We feel our connection with the earth. The infinite beauty and life and abundance. The infinitely nurturing power that supports all life here. We give thanks for the many manifestations of life on this earth. And we connect now especially with the animals, celebrating their lives in the forests and in the prairies and the mountains, in the oceans and rivers and streams, in the skies, in the earth, beneath the earth. Large to small, the infinite web of life here, so precious. We allow our hearts to open to the great love that we feel for all expressions of life, their beauty, their resilience, their intelligence, their ability to fulfill a niche perfectly in the larger unfoldment of life. All the animals that are trapped in the human worlds of commerce and exploitation, we hold in our hearts. We hold them with a sense of tenderness and loving kindness. We apologize on behalf of humanity that we are stealing their lives, their habitats, and their sovereignty. And now we see a great healing taking place. Out of the hearts of human beings, wisdom is arising. An awakening and a healing as human beings realize we are part of the circle of life. As we gaze out, we look upon all of creation. And sense into the enchanted reality that is all around us. And we see human beings opening their hearts and realizing that no animal needs to suffer at human hands for food, for entertainment, for products, for testing. This is a great, massive delusion that is dissolving, relentlessly dissolving, more and more every single day. Can never be justified, and we know it. We all know it. And alternatives are blossoming all around us. We see freedom, joy, harmony and peace, the ever-present reality beneath the outer surface, manifesting more and more every day in people's lives, as people realize their true nature as infinite and eternal consciousness, as expressions of love, compassion, creativity. And we see and feel the sacred feminine dimension of life rising in consciousness, caring, and there's respect, there's kindness and empathy, there's protection. And we give thanks for our own life. We give thanks for our abilities and our perspective, our understanding. We give thanks that we are able in this precious life to be part of the solution, to contribute our words, to contribute our actions, our thoughts and feelings, our creativity, our ideas, to contribute our spirit to the most important project that there is, to help to heal humanity, the great wound of animal abuse, of slavery, of other living beings. And we feel now our mind and our heart rising up and getting clearer, brighter, stronger, more aware, and filled with the light of wisdom that is shining always at the very center of our being. And we know that the light that shines in our heart is shining always also at the heart of the universe, is shining in every cell of our being. Guiding us, inspiring us, to fulfill our mission, our unique ministry, our unique purpose that we have on this earth. That as we do that, doors open where there were no doors. Windows of opportunity open where there were no windows. Because we are in alignment with the universal Dharma, the universal unfolding toward greater justice and freedom, joy and abundance, kindness and compassion, creativity and truth. We are a vehicle, so we give thanks. For the communities that have nurtured our life, to the communities that we are part of, we give thanks for the opportunity to contribute to these communities. And most of all, we give thanks for the light of life that we see shining in the sun and the moon and the stars, in the wind and the rain and the clouds, in the flowers, in all of the animals and birds and insects, in the children's eyes, in our hearts. Knowing the truth
we are far more than this physical body. I'm looking beyond the appearances to the great light that is shining always in our mind and heart, and in the minds and hearts of all beings. Breathing together. As we inhale now together, letting go, a nice exhale. Inhaling again together, exhaling, letting go. Now connecting with your unique aspiration, what you most yearn for in your heart. And when we inhale, it's like we pull back on the string of a bow. And when we exhale, we allow our exhalation to propel our aspiration out into the universe for the benefit of all beings. So together we inhale, exhale, and let it fly for the benefit of all beings. Inhale again. Nice big breath. Exhale. And let the aspiration that you feel fly into the universe, into the great mind and heart, and the shared consciousness, enriching and healing and awakening the field of consciousness that surrounds our planet, in which we move. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. May we all realize the original truth, the original brightness of our true nature, of our minds and hearts. Inhaling, and let it fly. So as we begin to bring our meditation now to a close, we connect again with the four viharas, the four aspects of our true home. With every inhalation, engendering in our heart the feeling of love. And as we exhale, just sending love into the world. Breathing and radiating love and kindness. May all beings be happy. All beings, with no exceptions, we send our love equally to all beings. With every inhalation, we engender in our heart now the feeling of compassion. As we exhale, we let it fly. Compassion for all beings. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May we act to relieve the suffering of others. abiding in compassion, our true home. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy. Great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world. And when we exhale, we radiate compassion and joy, radiate joy in all directions, filling the whole world with the truth. Infinite joy. And finally, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace, abiding in our true home of peace and harmony. In this moment, in this very moment, we are always abiding in our true home of peace. And so, as we exhale, we radiate peace in all directions, breathing and radiating peace. We see the earth bathe in the light of peace, in the heart of harmony, understanding. Abiding in our true home of love, compassion, joy, peace. Love, compassion, joy, and peace. So we give thanks, knowing that each of us, as we unfold the days and weeks ahead, we'll be connecting every day more and more authentically with our inner wisdom and with the light of peace and harmony shining in every cell of our being, that every day we are healing our physical body, our mental and emotional, and being a light to the entire society. As humanity progresses in the great adventure of awakening to our purpose here on this earth, we give thanks knowing that we are part of this awakening for the benefit of all beings. Breathing together, breathing with the earth,
everyone. I appreciate your contributing your presence, your energy, your awareness to our time of meditation. And I'm happy to take a few minutes now to talk about a few things, and then perhaps if there are any questions or comments, to share those if you have them. So this is great. So yeah, these times we're in. I mean, we're unprecedented challenges I think we're facing, and that's perhaps a very good thing. We've known, and we've talked about this a lot, that the foundation of our society in animal agriculture has got to change, and so we're going through many levels of crisis. I thought before we go on, I would just do a short reading to maybe focus a little bit. In earlier iterations of our meditation on the first Thursday, I read sometimes a small section of the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada is one of the ancient texts from the Buddhist tradition, considered probably the most essential epitome of the Buddhist teachings in the early days. It's one of the old early teachings. And so we're just kind of going through it in order of the chapters. This is chapter 11. Again, it's not very long. It's just a few verses. But it's kind of interesting. I think it's a good reminder. And this particular one is quite powerful. It's called, chapter 11 is Old Age. Old age. So, you know, it's kind of the reality. I think the Buddha here is sort of talking about the realities of our time here on this earth and our physical body. And so it seems a little bit, like it might be somewhat, what's the word? A little harsh, maybe, I guess. But anyway, this is what it is. We'll start out here. And then I'm happy to maybe say a few words if you have any comments. So it goes like this. The first few stanzas. Why the laughter? Why the joy when flames are ever burning? Surrounded by darkness, shouldn't you search for light? Look at this beautified body, a mass of sores propped up, full of illness, the object of many plans, with nothing stable or lasting. This body is worn out, so fragile, a nesting ground for disease. When life ends in death, the putrid body dissolves. What is the delight in seeing these dull white bones tossed away like white gourds in autumn? This city is built of bones, plastered with blood and flesh, and filled with aging, death, conceit, and hypocrisy. Even the splendid chariots of the royalty wear out. So too does the body decay. But the Dharma of the virtuous does not decay, for it is upheld when the virtuous teach it to good people. The person of little learning grows old like an ox. The flesh increases, but insight does not. And then, like I said, that's kind of harsh, but I think it's a really important point. You know, there's an old saying in Zen, you maybe heard me say it, that getting born is like getting onto a ship and taking off on a journey, and you know for sure that the ship is going to sink. And, that's the basic idea, is that, you know, this body is a vehicle, it's a temporary vehicle. And we tend very often, of course, we need to take care of it and feed and clothe and house and so forth and maintain it well, because it's the vehicle of our sovereignty and of our spirit and of our aspirations, but not to identify as that we are that. And I think that's the really important point underlying all of this, to see the reality of the physical body. But then in this particular, I think of the entire Dhammapada, This is the only place where the Buddha really talks about that moment of awakening, when one wakes up. And he says this: through many births, I have wandered on and on, searching for, but never finding, the builder of this house. To be born again and again is suffering. And then here it is. House builder, you are seen. You will not build a house again. All the rafters are broken, the ridgepole destroyed. The mind, gone to the unconstructed, has reached the end of craving. So that's really the key, I think, to the whole thing, is through meditation and inner silence, ethical living, the spiritual path, the mind can discover the builder of the house, which he's saying is really our delusion. Because of our delusion, we keep creating the situations in our life that cause suffering life after life. And there's always, of course, in the Buddhist tradition and most traditions of the world, the sense of multiple lifetimes. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. And so when we leave this body, we don't die, obviously. We're going to go on and experience the fruits of the seeds we've been planting in this lifetime. So it's good to be, you know, aware that of this whole thing. And so he says, all the rafters are broken, the ridgepole is destroyed. So the ridgepole, that's the key. That's the primal ignorance of thinking that what I am is a fundamentally separate self. And looking out like I'm separate and I've got to therefore compete and try to get what I want and keep away what I don't want and be in an endless struggle with others and with the world and so forth. That whole delusion, it creates its own momentum and we go on and on. So the whole idea is to awaken out of that. And that is not something anyone can do for anyone else. That's the work. And the more we do that, I would say, the better we can be at spreading and embodying the vegan message of compassion. So that's really the core, I think, of the vegan teaching is this, to discover the house builder, discover the ego, perhaps, the delusion of the separate self that creates the ridgepole, and off the ridgepole you get all the rafters, right? We have all of our projects, all of our identities, all of our various delusions that we attach to try to organize our life in a certain way and, of course, manipulate everything. And so the idea is to really go deeper and find our true source, the source of the being that we are. So that's pretty much it. There's two more after that, he says. Those who have neither lived the chaste life nor gained wealth in their youth waste away like frail herons in a lake devoid of fish. Those who have neither lived the chaste life nor gained wealth in their youth lie around like arrows misfired from a bow, lamenting the past. And I think, of course, what he means here, nor gained wealth in their youth. That's spiritual wealth, obviously. And he's not talking about trying to get money. Now, the spirit, see, that's really the thing. Like, and this is so important. I've noticed it. I'm sure you've all noticed it too, that a society's greatest wealth is its elders, right? The elders who have wisdom, who have gone through years and years and decades, and now have this richness of wisdom and experience that they can share with the rest of the society. I mean, in traditional communities, the elders were really highly respected and honored for their wisdom, and they were the advisors and the wise ones that would guide. But the problem is if those elders, when they were young, didn't make this effort to actually accumulate spiritual wealth and insight and intuition and so forth, and what happens? They get to be old people, closed-minded, ignorant old people that don't have a whole lot to contribute in many cases. That's really a sad truth. But it's actually the case, I think. And so that's why it's incumbent on all of us to do the work all the time, whatever our age is, and as we ripen and mature and develop, then we have something that we can really share that can be a blessing to the world. And I think that's the greatest resource right now. And I feel so much the sort of this lack of wise elders in our society, and how children are suffering because of that, and so forth. So anything we can do, I think, again, to bring forth this wisdom is important right now more than ever. All right, so I wanted to share that. And otherwise, we have a few minutes. I'm happy to see if anyone has a thought or a comment or a question. There's, like I say, there's lots of different things happening in the world, and this is the time. It's almost like the heat gets turned up more and more until the whole pan of water has now come to a rolling boil, and we don't know what the future is going to be bringing. But it seems to me more important than ever that those of us who are conscious and aware, and especially in the vegan movement, that we see the bigger picture, as big as we can possibly see it, and then do the best we can to keep our life and our consciousness established in the deeper truths. And from that position, we can do our writing and our speaking and our interacting and so forth to be part of the solution. And that's, I think, a wonderful thing, the more we can do that. And to always remember, like we have this, Judy and I and Madeline created, you know, years ago, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. You can go to circleofcompassion.org and be part of it. And every day at noon, we say our prayer. You know the prayer. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And never doubt that inner intention and sending that out is a blessing. What happens in the inner realms is very powerful. And sometimes I think it's, we lose sight of that in our society. We think if we're not actually running around doing something, that we're not contributing. But doing inner work is a very important part of the transformation, because as Gandhi said, and I think this is the ancient wisdom, it's really, the power is in individuals. Each one of us is an individual. When we awaken, that's the revolution. And that's the one person we can actually have power over. We want to waken up everybody else, but if we're not awake, again, it's like the old saying in the Buddhist tradition, the monkey up in the tree with his great compassion looking down at the fish in the brook and bringing the fish up to the safety of the tree and thinking he's helping, and actually he's just making it worse. So it's important to keep doing the inner work. All right, so does anyone have feel free to press *6 or
Will?
Raise your hand. I'm going to go ahead and
Will?
Change my view, and I can see everybody. And
can I be heard?
Okay, question. So Suzanne is waving her hand. Yes, go ahead, Suzanne.
So my question is, I've been hearing more about Weston Price, and they tout how Weston Price eating is good for you and good for your heart and good for your health and good for your future. And I was wondering, Will, if you could just say a little bit about what you know about Weston Price, because it seems like they've got all this science that says it's the greatest way to eat, and it certainly doesn't jive with what we know about veganism. So I'm confused. How do they get their backup for saying it's the greatest way to eat, although we know that you can produce science, if you want to produce science, you can say anything you want.
I think that kind of explains it more or less. You know, I used to teach college courses in epistemology, which is basically the philosophy that deals with how do we know what we think is true is actually true. And the Weston A. Price Foundation, as you know, was founded by a dentist. He didn't really talk about most of the stuff they're talking about. He never said anything about the importance of eating a lot of dairy or fat or meat. He was going around and looking at traditional diets and comparing them to processed foods. And I think, you know, what he was saying back in the 30s and 40s is a lot of truth to it. Eating a lot of toxic processed foods is not a good idea, or 50, I guess he's in the 50s. But But it's, I think his whole movement in many ways was kind of hijacked by people who had an agenda to promote eating meat. And really, and that, of course, and they've been, and this is something that, you know, they really came after T. Colin Campbell when he did the China study and tried to debunk what he said. And he did some research into Weston A. Price Foundation, which I've read his research and looked into it. And he uncovered the fact that the main donors of the money that they use to sort of get their message out there are the meat, dairy, and egg industries. I mean, they see the Weston A. Price Foundation as a front group for their interests. So, unfortunately, I know there's a lot of people who genuinely believe that eating meat and dairy and eggs is really healthy, and they actually believe it, but the people themselves, there's been a lot of problems. They've, one guy, he was the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. He died of a heart attack at the age of like 47 or something. I mean, eating all these organ meats and fat and raving about how healthy it is, and suddenly he just died. But they just keep, carrying on and saying the same thing because they're getting money for it. I think it's a lot of it. And it's a message, like John McDougall says, people love good news about their bad habits. And so, if you have, organizations that share information that supports people's beliefs about what they want to eat. In many cases, meat, dairy, and eggs are pretty addictive, and that's also what everybody else is eating. So it takes the pressure off. I can just Weston A. Price Foundation says that it's really healthy to eat these foods. And that's much more comfortable because that's what other people are eating. We can go to any restaurant and just order these fatty foods and with a lot of obviously cruelty and violence and disease. And the thing about the Weston A. Price Foundation is that they do have good things. I mean, they really do recommend organic. They recommend some good things. They recommend whole foods, and they're good in some ways. But the thing that they really are known for is attacking soy. I think that, they're right in the sense that, soy, if it's not organic, is toxic, and if you process it, it's toxic. But whole soy in moderation is like nuts. It's a pretty rich food. You don't sit down to a whole plate of almonds or walnuts or something. You shouldn't sit down to a whole plate of soy, but in tofu or tempeh or edamame or relatively unprocessed, it's a very healthy, great food with lots of vitamins and minerals, and it does have a lot of fat and protein as well. It's a very rich food. That's why they use it to fatten up all these animals. Most, 90% of soy is fed to animals to fatten them up. So that's a good question, but I think it's another example of the power of money and how easy it is to corrupt science. I mean, corrupting science, so-called science, is that's really a gigantic problem now. I mean, it's probably one of the biggest problems we're facing is that people can use science to justify virtually anything, including the enslavement of humanity, of animals, and of everything. And science can also be used, unfortunately, technologically, to actually enslave people. I mean, with 5G and tracking devices that are created by science and drugs and so forth, it's possible, unfortunately, for the first time in history to enslave the entire population. That was never possible before because people would rebel. But now with scientific technology, it's actually possible to enslave, for a few people to enslave the entire human population, potentially. So that's what I think we're facing right now is really resist the effort to turn human beings into livestock. The way we turn free living cows and pigs and chickens into livestock, it's a terrible thing what we did, and now it's happening to us. So it's, I think Weston A. Price is part of that whole thing of as you sow, so shall you reap. If you're going to create a society of animal agriculture, you're going to create a Weston A. Price society to justify the whole thing. It's just part of that matrix, that of delusion that keeps human beings as livestock and pushes them more and more into becoming livestock, actually. So you really have to debunk all this and resist it and try to show that how that it's not true.
Thank you, Will.
Question. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else have something they'd like to ask a question or anything? We have a few more minutes here. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Who's that? Area code 707.
Can I be heard? Hello.
Yes.
Will, this is Lily.
Oh, hi. Yes.
Hi, Will. Hi, Will. I wanted to go back to what you were talking about with the Dhammapada.
Yes.
Very interesting, because I feel like I'm going through my own version of it here, taking care of my husband, who will be 97 in August, and I've known him since he was 36, and I'm older too, but I'm a whole generation behind him, and I'm taking care of him, and it is such a privilege. At first I fought it. I thought, oh, this man of action, this mountain climber, this doctor, this can-do person in the world, he went to bed a year ago, and he hasn't gotten up yet. But when I ask him, do you feel like you're still you? He answers, yes. And when I ask him, are you enjoying your life? His answer is yes. It's very mysterious, and it's very interesting. And there's absolutely no resistance to the condition he finds himself in. He doesn't have any pain. He turned vegan at the age of 81 because of the World Peace Diet. And our home, our family life here is just beautiful. It really is beautiful. And you know, I went through a hell when I first realized my partner, my mate, the person I've spent my whole life with, what's next? And I'm not worried about what's next anymore. It's like, I'm just enjoying the present moment of the way my life is right now. And, it's like a complete transformation. And I know that this would not have happened if I were not vegan. I know that because the consciousness that I have because of being vegan, it keeps growing. The longer you're, and there may be some newcomers, on your call. And I consider myself a newcomer, even though this is my 15th year of being vegan. It's a revelation. It keeps giving. It's just amazing. And I'm going to close with this, but I just wanted to, tell you, I've been looking over the World Peace Diet, which I have read 8 times and, 4 times publicly on a weekly conference call, reading it aloud and discussing it and opening it up to discussion. I when I read it, I said it's the most important book I've ever read in my life, and I'm quite the reader. And I absolutely hold that to be the truth. This one